Good evening and welcome to the MGEV's community podcast, streaming live on Tuesday, the 30th of July, 2024. We're here to discuss MGEVs, hoping to inform and entertain you for up to an hour. I'm Tom Sedge, T Sedge on the forum. I live in Devon and I'm currently driving the MG4 long range trophy that you see behind me. Joining us this week in our little merry band are from South London, Leo Mindell. Hi, Leo.
Hi there. Hi, yes, I'm joining you from South London today. Tomorrow I will be on the other side of the channel.
Wow, well, we're looking forward to talking about your road trip. And you have an MG5 and a Cyberstar on order, is that right?
MG5 and Cyberstar on order. I won't hold my breath for that, or I'll be going very dark colours if I held my breath for too long on that one. But I'm sure we'll come to that as well, Miles.
We'll be talking about Cyberstar deliveries too. And also joining us from Trolley Group MG, the Innovation Development Manager, Miles Roberts. Hi, Miles.
Hi everyone, Miles Roberts, CG on the forum. Not currently driving an MG, but my wife is due to change her car shortly, and we're trying to test drive her with a X-Power and see how we get on with that.
Oh, excellent. And I know you have some things to tell us today about your experiences driving the Cyberstar at Millbrook. So we'll
Yes, that
come
was
on to
last
that
week.
shortly.
That was great. I talk about that, yeah.
So, if you're watching us live, thank you for joining us. And please click the like button and join the discussion in the chat window. If you're watching later, thank you for choosing to watch this video. And please subscribe to get a notification when we go live next time. We'd just like to thank our premium members, Sloucher, MGBGT2ZS, Very Fat Bloke, Evie Cog, Whiskery, Lager Baloo, Big Bear. And if you like what we do at MGEVs, please support us by becoming a premium member. So tonight we're going to cover the news on electric vehicles in the UK and the new MGEVs that are coming up and being delivered and released. Keep voting on the poll on the forum for other topics that you'd like to see in future podcasts. And if there's a topic that isn't on the list, don't forget to request it on the poll thread. So we'll open tonight with some UK EV news. And the first topic is that we have hit 1 million electric vehicle chargers in the UK. It's a milestone hit a few weeks ago, and that's private and public combined. That sounds to me like a lot. Do you think it's a lot, Leo? Does it sound like a lot to you?
I think it's we looked at when we were looking at the election episode, we looked at the penetration in certain regions and how it was different. And I think this is very much that case. So if you look at public chargers, I can't remember the exact figures now, but in my area, I believe in my borough in London, it's around about 800, 1,000, that sort of figure. And a borough that's just north of me, it was around about 30. So it's a massive difference. But if you look around at the number of ones on people's driveways, again, it's going to be very, very different. But I think actually it's something really good to shout about. A million is, that suddenly when you start hearing figures like that and you start hearing about battery lives or warranties that are lasting for 8+ years, some of those big issues and big things that people are talking about are just disappearing.
Yeah, and also I read, I think it's something, I might be wrong, something like 60,000 public chargers of various types. And I also looked up the stats on petrol stations. So there are only 8,300 petrol stations remaining in the UK, which surprised me. I thought it was a lot more than that. And on average, they have about eight petrol pumps, which is something like 65,000. So although the public chargers will include non-rapid ones and will take a lot longer than the petrol pump, it shows that we're making some progress, and we must be getting there. How have you found it, Miles? You're often out and about traveling with an EV.
Yeah,
How have you found the experience?
so this last couple of weeks, I mean this last month or two, I've done sort of 250 mile journeys each way to London, three occasions now, most recently when I went to Millbrook last week, I set off from Skipton and went to Chorley, then to Birmingham, then down to Millbrook, and that was 230 miles one way. And I was very fortunate in that the pub that I stayed at, as well as being ridiculously cheap, having a really good breakfast, and being actually not a bad night's sleep, had a one of the old, oh, what are they called now, Zero Net. So Zero Net was this scheme where basically hotels and restaurants and things could apply to have a free car charger installed, and typically these were 3 kilowatt single phase 16 amp sockets. or even sometimes just a 3-pin plug, but they were put in the property for free about 10 years or more ago. Anyways, I saw on ZapMap that it had a charger, so I turned up there, and it turned out that the Type 2 3-kilowatt chargers didn't work, but the 3-pin plug socket did.
Right.
So I plugged on my 3-pin socket, and, you know, overnight I got 130 miles of range added for free, gratis, for nothing.
Right.
And given that the hotel was like 70 quid for the night's accommodation, including a really good breakfast, it was basically for nothing. So, so yes, I mean, that helped, because I got there with, like, you know, I'd done 230 miles in my Ioniq, and I got there with something like 50, 60 miles left in the tank. It does about 280 miles on a full charge. But yeah, so this top up, so I left there effectively the next day with like 180, 190 miles, which was plenty then for me to be able to get a decent way up the motorway. And I ended up stopping again at Hilton Park Services on the M6. This is the revelation that there is now about 24 chargers there.
Oh, fantastic.
Loads of grid serves.
Yeah.
As well as Tesla chargers. And literally, you know, this 350 kilowatt charger in my Ioniq, I plugged it into charge, went in to use the bathroom, got a sandwich from Dwight Smith, came out, and it was 75% already. It would be gone from like 50 to 75% in 15,
that's
20
fantastic.
Minutes.
So, well, it's all you need if that's how long you take anyway. That's what I find. I recently did a trip to Manchester, and I went to Gloucester Services, which has just had Tesla public charging open to all EVs, not just Teslas, both northbound and southbound. And that was a joy, because I like the services anyway, because it's this farm shop arrangement, as you'll know.
Oh, it's
if you
very attractive services, yeah.
Yeah, but they were not just Tesla chargers. There were a whole bunch of something else. I don't think they were grid serve. I don't remember, but I went to the Tesla ones because they were 5p cheaper. I mean, the prices were pretty close. And it was just plug in. And by the time you'd been in, been to the loo, had a hot meal, came out, it was almost charging too quickly.
Well, that's it. And I think that the... so my experience now is that where you have got those services, where there is, you know, 18, 20 chargers at a go, it's great.
Yes.
That's it. But, you know, because you've got, you know, there was half the bays were empty.
Yes, so that's the experience I had.
Yeah. It gives the confidence that, you know, you can plug in and go, and it doesn't take that extra time. Whereas I went to, I think it was Braintree service on the M25. Mm. Not Braintree, no. Too long. Just on the M40 on the M25. I don't know very well. When I went there's like six Ioniq chargers and four grid surf chargers, and they were all busy, and there was a queue of cars. That was Wimbledon when I went down for that.
So not enough capacity. Yeah.
So just not enough capacity in a very busy service at a busy area. They just all need upgrading to that. So.
Yeah, they're getting there. I mean, they're opening. I mean, also I had a similar experience to you. I went to Uxbridge on another trip and stayed in a hotel. It was a Premier Inn, and it had a bank of Type 2s front and back, and literally nobody was using them. And also it was slightly overgrown. I hadn't really been gardening. Nobody, you know, people had just been parking any car there. And I thought, well, I'll give that a go. It's the very first time I've used my Type 2 cable, since I always charge at home and use a rapid charge. I thought I'd better use it. I bought the thing. I bought a 3-phase one. Cost me a fortune. Great big heavy thing. First one I tried didn't work. Second one did work. It was the BP Pulse, which are not famous for being that great. But it was great. Same experience as you. Woke up in the morning, was fully charged. And I didn't need to do the stop I was going to do on the way back. So it's great. So progress, I hope. We're getting there slowly. Next bit of news. We've had the government, the new government, the Labour government, confirming they don't currently have plans to impose any tariffs on Chinese vehicle imports. I don't think they've ruled it out ever, but they're not planning to follow the European action. Which would have made a big difference. So we talked about this in depth before, about the various different rates, and MG being rated higher because of the amount of government assistance they're perceived to have. But it would have made a big difference, right? I think 30% additional tariffs.
Around that, which would have, that would have, it would have it, I mean, it's already, retail-wise, it's already really difficult to sell people electric cars.
Mm.
Most of them are 80% are being bought by fleets or through salary sacrifice schemes or leasing.
Yeah.
Actual retail PCP or cash customers are very thin on the ground. Mm. I think if you were to increase the prices by 20-30%, that's certainly not going to help that transition. I'm glad that we're not getting the fees at the moment, but I would say that Yeah, it's still, if anything, we could do with some subsidies towards EVs, really, to encourage
Yeah.
take-up at the moment.
Well, on that note, with the reintroduction of the 2030 target for phasing out or banning the sale of ICE cars, in terms of combustion engine cars, which the Conservative government had put back to 2035, and now it's being put back again to 2030. Although, as we talked about before, the escalator where manufacturers have to produce a certain percentage of EVs each year hadn't been changed. So that's still happening and accelerating towards 2030 anyway. But with
Yeah.
that coming back to 2030, there's been a lot of appeals from manufacturers to have additional support schemes. Zero rating of VAT has been suggested, possible subsidies. And we've had a warning from Stellantis that it might shut its UK plants, which produce mainly vans, I believe, at Ellesmere Port and Luton these
Yeah,
days.
correct. Yeah, it makes the
And
electric
again,
vans for both Vauxhall, Peugeot,
over
and
changing
Fiat.
rules and phasing out. Yeah. So there's a bunch of clamour for something to be done. I think it's all driven by depressed sales, but I think that's mainly down to interest rates, finance, economy. Would you
Yeah,
agree?
well, it's just, yeah, I mean, it's difficult. So, MG last year, 39% of their cars sold were EV. So, there weren't any targets last year, but they were on 39% by the end of the year. So, the vast majority of their cars being sold were electric, and that was great. But this year, they haven't really changed the pricing too much on the cars. They've stayed the same. They haven't had any major price hikes and things. But I believe they're currently tracking around 23, 24% from conversations I've had internally with MG. So they're thereabouts with the target. But obviously that's a massive
So
drop from where they were.
you're saying that 23, 24% of their new cars are electric and the rest are hybrid or petrol? Is that
Petrol
what
or
you're saying?
hybrid. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's
So,
interesting.
I mean, obviously they've launched the new MG3, which has been a new, relatively high volume seller. The HS has been a high volume seller throughout last year as well, but also this year. The ZS petrol and ZS EV are coming to end of life this year, so there's sort of an out of stock. There are some very competitive offers actually at the moment for the run out of stock on EV. So if anyone's looking for a ZS EV standard range, for example, you can get the SE for like 19,995. And the trophy for 22,495, I think it is, which
That's
is
a good deal.
for a brand new, not pre-registered, but brand new car. So that's a price. And likewise, the MG4, MG themselves have thrown some extra support at it. So you now get an MG4 SE short range for like 22,250, and a trophy long range for about 27,500. So, or 20, maybe even less than that. So, yeah, there's some real strong offers on the
Good
MG4s,
deals out there.
MGZSs. So, again, with the MG4 likely to be announced as a new facelift coming later this year, probably on sale next year, but that they're going to look to sort of like end of life of that model.
I mean, do we
But they need
think
to
that
obviously
we
maintain
Sorry,
that
go on.
22% where they're at the moment,
Yeah, so if it's like that for MG, I guess there'd be some panicking manufacturers next year.
Yeah, and I
'Cause
think
it goes up a little
the
bit, about 10% a year, doesn't it? Or more than 10% a year.
so it's 22% this year, it's 28% next year, and then it's 35, I think. So it is increasing over the next couple of years, and I think that some manufacturers, like for example Ford and Honda, have got a bigger hill to climb compared to, and VW as well. And of course, what could happen is that some of these manufacturers towards the latter part of this year might just go, okay, well, if you want a petrol diesel car, you'll have to register it in January because we can't afford to register any more petrol cars this year. So we'll just see how that goes. But no, at the
So
moment, MG's
they'll
tracking
shuffle the
okay, but it
sale
needs to.
around. They'll move the sales around to
Yeah.
try and bridge
But
that, fit them into the right year.
of course, if you next year you start off with, I don't know, an extra couple of thousand petrol registrations, that just gives you a bigger
Puts you
challenge next year.
behind. Yeah, yeah,
Yeah.
yeah. So there could be some aggressive discounting in the market. But I would
this
guess
is
you'd see it
this
near
is
the end
not
of each year. You'd see
this isn't
is it
dissimilar to
January to
other.
December? Sorry.
So I was going to say this isn't dissimilar to other early market adoption and movement of how markets work. You normally get the early adopters that are people like ourselves who've who take or buy this thing very early, and then you do get a dip. You always get a dip off, and then it will slowly go, and then the hockey curve will come back in again. And we are in that place, and it's going to be exactly the same as every other thing. I remember, we didn't have podcasts at the time. I remember talking to people when mobile phones launched, and about how that was that going to work? You know, some of us all remember the 3G rollouts and the 4G rollouts, and how that's never going to get, you know, it's in one place and it's never going to work, and it's going to be a disaster. And it does take time for technology and for the general population to follow early adopters. And feel comfortable. And I think that's going to happen. And I think it is going to happen. Mm. And sometimes it's market forces will dictate it rather than us trying to push it in a direction or say it's going to happen.
And there's been a ton of negative press lately, negative press stories about EVs, which hasn't helped. So
couple of years, there's been quite a concerted effort, I feel, from some parts to keep putting out, presumably because they do get a lot of clicks online, so it's good advertising revenue. So, you know, Daily Mail's sidebar of shame will have an EV story negatively there somewhere, because they know, you know,
it sells papers.
It's the way the feedback loop works, is that, you know, they do a story about EV, it's saying it's bad, they get loads and loads of clicks on it, so they go, great, we'll do another one like that then. And then, you know, it keeps doing more and more stories like that. Mm. I was doing an event this weekend where members of the public, it was a Chorley Flower Show. We were one of the sponsors, so we had like six cars there with the MG3, the MG4, Nissan Townstar EV, a couple of big pickups as well. And I was talking to people about the, you know, sort of saying, this is the MG3, this is hybrid, this is the MG4, this is electric. And the number of people who were saying, I won't have an electric car, not until I'm forced to.
Right.
And I was like, why? Mm. Well, they're not ready for it yet. And I was talking to these people, genuinely, like one of them, she had a 4-year-old car and it's done 6,000 miles. Mm. So she's doing she's doing less mileage than I've done since April. and she's like, yeah, well, they're not ready to work. And I said, do you have a driveway? Yes, I do. Well, there's literally no issue for you whatsoever then.
No.
But what if I want to do a long journey? I said, well, it looks like you haven't done any long journeys at all. So, but if you do want to do a long journey, you know what? I said, literally 3 times in the last 6 weeks, I've been to London and back in my electric car. I said, and it's not a challenge. It really isn't. You know? And I said, I'm doing 20-odd thousand miles a year. If, you know, the proof's in the pudding, I said, I make a bit of a joke of it. I said, I'm a Yorkshireman. I'm tighter than cramp. The money saving from fuel is what does it for me. But I also really like the drive.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of people were repeating, like one person was adamant that the all of the, you know, rare earth materials that they use in the batteries, that's much worse the environment than any petrol or diesel car. And when you try and sort of talk, you know, at events like this, obviously you can't sit someone down and show them a spreadsheet or show them a PowerPoint presentation to why they're wrong. But, you know, trying to sort of explain to people, you know, look, yes, like this MG4 is made in China where they have a lot of coal on the grid, and it has carbon footprint when being built of like 7 tons versus a Golf that's got 1.5 ton carbon footprint, but then it still repays the carbon debt within sort of 17,000 miles. So it's, you know, I was sort of trying to explain that to them, but you know, they've obviously read a lot of Facebook posts about, you know, child miners and things like that, and I suppose it's like with any polarized debate like that, that they feel that it's a deprivation of liberty that they're being told that they need to get rid of their petrol or diesel car that they love and have to turn electric instead.
And if only they would try one, they would probably want one straight away. But it's getting them. It's just crucial to get them in to test one out and realize, oh, actually, it goes really well. It goes better than my petrol car or my diesel car.
I was saying to, you know, I was literally just
get over the fear of charging. Yeah,
with the X-Power on display at the show, and I was like, you know, the one guy came up to me and says, oh, he says, you won't tempt me out of my car. So what car have you got? A Volkswagen Golf GTE. Best car I've ever had. So it's plug-in hybrid Golf. It's about 15 miles on electric. And I've driven one before. I drove one down from Scotland. I bought one for stock once and drove it down from Scotland. And it was an all right drive. It was, to me, it felt quite basic. It didn't feel anything special. Nice seats, I'll say that, for it, but it wasn't anything major. And so I said, this electric car's, your GTE's got 180 brake horsepower. This electric car's only got 434 under 0 to 60 in 3.8 seconds, and cost about a fiver to fill with fuel.
Yeah.
And, we took it on a track against a BMW M2 and won. Mm. People seem to think that, again, if they've not driven one.
Yeah, it's a different proposition. Yeah, well, I think they'll get there eventually. They'll get there eventually. I've given up trying to evangelize too much and more into just answering simple questions about how easy it is and how I don't think about it. And literally, I don't think about it when I go on a long journey. I would always have looked on the map when I was taking any long journey with a petrol car. But now I just, it's supplemented by a quick look at that map maybe, or I probably know the places I'm going to stop already. And I'm not fussed if they're busy, because I think once I've had to queue, but that's like once out of the last 20 times. Mm-hmm. So yeah. All right, let's move on, because I think everyone is waiting to hear about the new MG EVs. So we have some news to report. So as you all have noticed, there are many reviews of the MG Cyberster. And then lots of UK reviews out of UK spec cars driven on UK roads, which makes a big difference because it's not exactly the same car as you'll find people are driving around in China. And as part of that, Miles has been out on a training day. And lucky Miles, imagine a job where you get paid to go to Millbrook and drive around in a Cyberster all day long. So Miles, how was it? What did you learn? What was the experience like? And what can you tell us about the new Cyberster?
I mean, obviously, it was awful, obviously. going to the only problem is with Millbrook, if anyone, from outside the country or whoever's not heard of Millbrook before, Millbrook Proving Ground is a test centre that was built originally by Vauxhall when they were based in Luton. Right. And it's been the site of a lot of filming for Top Gear. So when Top Gear were, you might remember a few years ago, they did a thing with some HGVs. They had a lorry each. Jeremy Clarkson painted his windscreen black and he couldn't see out of it.
Yeah, I remember that one.
So, yeah, and Fifth Gear do a lot of filming there, which was on Channel 5, as well as lots of other things as well. The Casino Royale 007 film where James Bond rolled his Aston Martin, that was filmed on the Alpine circuit at Millbrook. And also Johnny English, where the helicopter lands on top of the roof of the helicopter, the helicopter lands on an ambulance, that was also filmed at Millbrook.
Yeah.
So it's used for all sorts of stuff. It's got a mile long straight. It's got a massive bowl circuit which it does high speed testing, where it's got different lanes for different speeds. So in different lanes, you basically has a neutral steer point. So 85 miles an hour in theory, you wouldn't need to use your steering if you're in lane 3, for example. And it's used for high speed testing by a lot of different manufacturers. Now, one of the things about this is, unfortunately, because it's a test site for lots of different manufacturers, when you go on site, they take stickers and cover all the cameras on your mobile phones. And if they see you peel out, and they check them at the end of the day because there's a tamper seal. So if you've taken them off at all, you basically get your phone taken off you until you've deleted any images you've taken. So I had to cover the phone. So I couldn't show you any photos of the, or videos of the cars that I've driven, unfortunately. I really wish I could have, but it's not possible. The Gordon Murray T50 was testing the day that I was there.
Wow.
Together with some sort of strange rallycross type vehicle as well.
Mm-hmm.
So on the day, so we go to the circuit, and we were in one of the sort of like a tent almost that they've built up, as sort of one of those sort of semi-permanent sort of tents. The couple of cars inside, there was a New English White with a red roof, which looked really nice, actually. I was surprised because on the photos on the website, New English White looked a little bit like Hearing Aid Beige.
Right.
But in real life, New English White is actually a lovely colour, particularly with the red roof. Mm. It looks really, really nice. And it's the free paint colour when you choose this at Cyberster. The other car they had in the inside was a Inca Yellow.
Oh yeah,
the black roof and the grey and black interior, and that looked very nice also. Couple of changes have been made from the Chinese spec to the UK.
Yes.
So they've dropped the driver's seat by around an inch or so, so mm-hmm. that the you're sat slightly lower to the ground. There is a wind deflector, which is installed behind, between the headrests. I think that's about it. All the software is completely different. And the dashboard and everything, whereas we saw on the pre-production or the Chinese spec cars yeah. when they came in last year, they had like an all red dashboard, which was about three shades of red because the plastic and the Alcantara and the leather weren't all the same red. Now the red and black interior means you've just got a red steering wheel, which is leather. You've got Alcantara red inserts in the seats, but the rest of it's black. So it's not as, doesn't not look quite as much like a sort yeah. of, you know, like a bacon factory, you know, like it is.
Yeah,
in the
original one. Not overwhelmingly red.
Yeah. yeah. And the gray interior looks nice actually as well, with again, gray Alcantara on the seat facings. In the center, and then a gray steering wheel, but then black.
I've heard everybody saying high quality materials. Was that you're in agreement with that?
It was. Genuinely, I really felt that it had a really, really nice feel inside it. It felt really plush. All the switchgear feels good. The screens feel really nice. In answer to a couple of things that people may have seen on, you know, where CarWow say that, oh, well, you can't see the map because your hand's there on the steering wheel.
I
didn't really see that on my test drive. I didn't notice that was an issue at all. It was taking out perhaps about 5-10% if my hand was on the wheel there. But also the sat nav instructions can be repeated on the center console, on the center of those three screens, so you can see the arrows and things like that on the middle screen as well if you wish. The seat controls are on the door. They're easy to get to. The seat bolster is adjusted through the center console, like sat nav, not the main display that's above the it's in the center console with the like climate control and everything like that. So some controls are done like that. It's got ambient lighting, which you can choose any one of God knows how many colors, and you can have it like a breathing thing, so it sort of pulses slowly if you wish. LED adaptive headlights. The whole car felt great. So they gave us the opportunity to drive the Trophy, which is the rear-wheel drive, and the GT, which is the all-wheel drive. And they let us take it out initially on the Alpine circuit, which is it's got like 30-degree slopes at some parts. It's got lots of sort of switchback corners. It's got long dips that then go up. It's a really great circuit for having fun, really, in a car. Initially, everyone was paired up, but there was 8 cars and there were 15 people in my group, and so I managed to get a car on my own.
Excellent.
So I actually got to drive both cars twice.
Right.
We kept switching between the cars so everyone got a chance to drive.
And how did they compare? What did you notice?
So I went out in the Trophy first, so rear-wheel drive. And
to that 300 horsepower, roughly
340-ish.
340.
It drove brilliantly. It really did. And I expected to think, I mean, 340 horsepower, it's going to feel quick, isn't it? But it felt really, really planted. And I was, when I drove the GT after, the only difference I would notice is that the GT was slightly more stuck to the ground, because the front on the rear wheel drive car, the back sometimes wanted to do a little bit of oversteer.
Being pulled around on the GT.
On the GT, I couldn't provoke any oversteer or understeer. And in fact, later in the day, they took us out onto the handling circuit, and a professional driver, in my case, it was a guy who was from a Formula 3 background, basically tried to scare the bejesus out of me. So we did 3 laps on the handling circuit at Millbrook. Now, the handling circuit at Millbrook is...
Was he successful?
In scaring me, I mean, there's a grab handle in the center console of the... And I was using that. I was holding on for grim death with that. I had a helmet on and everything. It's the sort of thing where he's approaching a 90-degree corner at, you know, 85, 90 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Stamps on the brakes. We make it round like it's on rails, and then he's stamping on the accelerator, you know, halfway around. So the first corner you come up to, it's supposed to the handling circuit's designed to make to show up any issues with handling. So the first corner you get to is supposed to make cars understeer. Right. But it doesn't. It just goes around like it's on rails. Second corner it's supposed to oversteer. Doesn't. It just goes around like it's on rails.
Wow.
There's then like a corner that progressively gets tighter and tighter and tighter as you're going around, which is a horrible thing to drive around. But again, it just glued to the ground. The guy that was driving it, he's obviously drives a lot of cars.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, off the record, what do you think of it? You know, he says, I've been driving it all day. I can't get it to go wrong. He says, it's just literally.
Great. That's what you want to hear. Now,
it's just stuck like, yeah.
I heard that it's a 50-50 weight distribution, but does that apply to the GT only? It's a trophy.
Yes,
more
the GT is 50-50.
That might explain some of what you experienced.
Yeah, the trophy is around 48 to 52. So it's not a massive difference.
Not massive. Okay.
No, because that's where the motors themselves aren't that heavy. So around 48-52 on the trophy. The GT is 50-50. The GT is the one that the professional driver took us around in. The comforting thing was, if he could drive it like an absolute lunatic, like his pants were on fire. I mean, I'd been driving what I would class as exuberantly around the Alpine circuit. And obviously, I don't know the circuit particularly well. I've driven it a few times in the past, but last time was a few years ago. I was trying to, at certain corners where I felt more confident, I was trying to sort of, you know, give it a bit more and see if I could get it to provoke a bit of oversteer or something. This guy was, I'd say, you know, whereas I would go into a corner at 60, he was doing it at 90.
Right.
Whereas I would progressively go on the brakes, he was stamping on them. Now, they are Brembo brakes.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about the Brembo brakes that it's got is that it's 4 pots front, 2 pots rear.
And they're what, ventilated steel?
Ventilated steel discs. Yeah. It'll go from, so the GT will do 0 to 60 in 3.4 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
3.2, something like that. But it'll go from 60 to 0 in 33 meters. Now, if you know your highway code, it's supposed to be 100 meters or so. So it really does stop on a dime. It was, the handling of it was great. I went on the high speed bowl with it, with the roof down.
And how bad was the buffeting?
Not bad. And I did 115. So I think that, you know, if you're on a bank circuit 115 and you can still hear yourself think, it's probably not going to be too bad at 70.
And it's 124 top speed?
Apparently around that. One person said their dash did say 127 on the bowl. But yeah, it's around that sort of figure.
Right, go Leo. Leo, you must have loads of questions.
Yeah, so I've got lots of questions, but quickly. Miles, see, you've driven both. You've said about the understeer you felt a little bit on the trophy.
No, it was slight oversteer on the trophy.
Slight oversteer, sorry. Given the choice and the where they're sitting in the market, what would you pump for?
If the money was the absolute thing, I'd go for the trophy because I still think it's a brilliant car. I wouldn't feel hard done with the trophy at all. And I quite like the wheels actually on the trophy. I think the 19-inch wheels are quite nice on it.
That's interesting, I don't. The wheels sell it for me the other way around, but it's like wheels always.
So in reality, so I think it's actually a car that looks better in real life than it does on photos. Most automotive manufacturers will show you a photo of something looking amazing and then give you the Ford Puma. Or Cougar, whatever. You know, photos worse than it actually looks in real life. I think the proportions look a lot better in reality.
I mean, it's been mentioned, there's been lots and lots of reviews recently. They're really coming out. And some of them, I feel like the reviews are trying to find something negative to say.
They're trying to
fill a column inch. And of course, you know, they keep on referring to whether it is or isn't as good as the Boxster. And I think you're always going to be sitting here
I posed this question to the Formula 3 driver. And I said, there's been loads of people saying that this car doesn't handle as well as a Boxster. And he says, I've got a Boxster.
Right. Okay.
I said, well, what do you think about it? He said, this does feel heavier. Not in a negative way. He says, it feels safer. You know, it does hide its weight very, very well. It's got 510 horsepower, which helps. But you have to remember that the entry-level Boxster is £58,000, and that comes with 18-inch wheels and does 0 to 60 in about 5.5 seconds.
Yeah.
So, you know, pound for pound, you're paying a lot more for a Boxster, in a spec that you can't really order because they won't even sell you one with 18-inch wheels. You have to It has to be a factory build, obviously, to get 18-inch wheels on a Boxster. But it's not something that, yeah. And then if you want to add optional extras like a windscreen wipers and a horn, then you have to into many thousands more. The value of the Cyberster and the performance it gives, and I say it's probably more comfortable than a Boxster.
Okay.
It's not as pared back, but I think it's genuinely. I think for what I see it as competing against, which is things like the BMW Z4. Which nobody buys, I
Okay.
suppose, but I think it's leaps ahead.
Check your
Moving
appetite.
away from the car itself as a car, which you've talked about quite a lot, and there's also a lot of those reviews. From a dealer perspective, a couple of questions to me. One is, how do you think this is going to sit as you in your dealership? Because it's going to be a change. How do you see where do you see what did you get a feel for about the after sales service? Is there going to be a change in the way that they MG deal with it? Anything like that? And even to the point of, have they said to you what the service plan is and those sort of things for the car?
So, in terms of how the dealer will sell it and how the dealer will position it within the thing, there's only 65 dealers in the UK going to be taking the Cyberster, and they're the ones which have got the space for it, that have got the commitments to commit. They've committed to get having one trained, at minimum, one trained sales exec specialist on Cyberster. It's got its, there's a special plinth and everything in the showroom it goes on, so trying to make the showroom feel a bit more high-end around that particular model. And it does quite a good job of that. In terms of the after sales, MG is very well aware that its after sales support to its dealers hasn't been as good as we would have hoped at certain points, and it's therefore they're trying to make changes across the board, and that includes doing more employment of new individuals and things, bringing people on board. It's not the sort of thing you can shake, you can just go ping and it's done. So the recruitment process is ongoing. They've just switched their in the last couple of months, their customer service is now being done by a separate office. They've got more staff, so
Well,
they're
that's good.
taking care of all that. I think that the expectation for MG internally, and also what we're seeing as with dealers, is that the majority of people who are buying the Cyberster are what we call conquest customers, customers that haven't previously had an MG within the last 10 years, shall we say. So they may well have had an MGB GT at the past, or
Way back when.
or maybe in the 90s they had an MG, but they haven't, maybe had an MGF or something, but they haven't had an MG recently since the SAIC ownership.
And what's
And
I mean, as we're talking about these showrooms, and I mean, what's the situation with deliveries? Because
so
we're hearing that we were hoping that we would
last time we
have
spoke, we were
demonstrators.
expecting cars. Yeah, last time we spoke, we were expecting the cars to arrive end of July, and here we are, 30th of July, and there's no cars in showrooms. So a bulletin came out last week to dealers, basically saying, sorry. They've arrived in Portbury. The cars are physically here, but they're not actually able to be registered, and that's due to a rubber stamping issue with the UK government. So, as what previously happened pre-Brexit is that a car would be a rubber stamp for sale across all of Europe, including UK, and so you'd go to Germany or France or UK, and one of those countries would be able to put a stamp on it, and that would enable you to sell it across Europe. And in UK, since Brexit, there's basically, well, there's a small department. I'm not sure if it's one person, but it seems like it's just one person who does this job. And there's been an awful lot of cars launched this year, new models, because of the push towards electrification. There's an awful lot of new models had to be launched this year. And so they're running at quite a delay, because basically old Bob that does the rubber stamping has days holiday and things like that, and so cars don't get seen to. So we can't re physically register them until it's on DVLA system, and we've been told that that's likely to be within the next 3 weeks. So hopefully by the end of August we'll have the cars in showrooms, or at least demonstrators out, and
And the first customer delivery?
customers' cars, well, the important one, yeah, customers' cars are likely to arrive for registration first week of September.
Oh, well, I'm back.
So you get the new
So yeah, so
registration at least.
So yeah, it makes sense from alliteration anyway.
No, nobody's going to bite this late in there. So, but one of my questions, we skipped over Miles. Did they talk about sort of servicing side of it? I know you say that 60 odd dealers are going to be taking the car. Will all dealers be able to service the car? Have they given any idea of the sort of the service plan or length of service? Yeah. Any of those things that you as a dealer, they may have imparted?
Yeah, I mean,
you can't tell us, but you know.
Any VAT registered dealer garage can work on a car and maintain warranty. Any MG dealer would be able to service the Cyberster. However, obviously the Cyberster dealers have greater familiarity with the model and be able to perhaps diagnose faults faster if there was some. In terms of the frequency of servicing, I expect it will follow the same as the other EV models, so around 12 months, 15,000 miles.
Mm-hmm. Because that's quite different to, say, VAG. They're pushing theirs to like 2 or 3 years on some of theirs. You know, if you go get an ID3, they're saying 2 years.
Yeah, and what MG I think likes to do is to be honest, bring them back in and do software updates on things, and also.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. Quiet. That any news of software updates in the ether?
There's no news of it being over the air. They haven't mentioned that at all. Whether it will be or not, I don't know, but they didn't mention it at all. The train.
And Leo.
Yeah.
We've got a question on the chat from Bernie. What are the insurance premiums looking like? What do we?
So I went on to my multi Admiral. Pretty sure it's Admiral. Yeah, and I went and put it in, plugged it in. It came about £633, if I remember, somewhere in that figure, right. 650 to put it on as a third car on my plan.
And how does that compare with your MG5? Do you know what you're paying for that?
My MG5 is about, off the top of my head, it's about 400 and something, I think. I wasn't surprised it's more. I wasn't surprised it's more.
Sounds good. And yours is the GT or the Trophy?
That was on GT.
GT.
Yeah. GT on a driveway. Hmm. That sort of, you know, the usual sort of questions they ask you.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool.
So I wasn't surprised. I put it something like a 6,000 miles or something like that. I can't see anybody. This isn't going to be one of these cars. Yeah. I think that people are going to say, "Oh, I've done 150,000 miles in it."
Yeah.
But on the other side, I'm hopeful it's going to be a comfortable drive because I do really I am buying this to drive around doing long distance.
Yeah, yeah.
One point just to make was that. At the end of the day on the training day, obviously the car had been used by a whole lot of dealers like myself to go and have fun in. I say driving up to 100 odd miles an hour on the bowl.
Yeah.
Then taken out on the performance circuit, you know, we did a 0 to 100 acceleration test and then back down to 0. That was on the straight. We had some fun in the car and we drove it well in excess of what would normally be possible on the UK roads.
Mm-hmm.
And we were averaging 2 miles per kilowatt hour. So I think worst case scenario, that means about 150 miles range, driven like an absolute lunatic.
Yeah.
Which I don't think is bad for a 510 brake horsepower.
No. I mean, it's very good, really, with the larger 77 kilowatt hour pack, which they've gone for in the UK. Yeah.
So yes, I think that, you know, worst case scenario, probably around 150 miles.
And you also, earlier in the year, at Goodwood got a chance to look at the Cyberster GTS. Can you tell us what that is? It looks like it might go into production.
Yeah, so the Cyber GTS was actually on show at Millbrook as well. So that was when it had come back from Goodwood, it went to Millbrook. And it was in British Racing Green, controversially. Mm-hmm. I say controversially because it's probably the colour that most people have asked for the Cyber.
If that came today, that was it.
We've had that conversation at home, and if it came out, I would be marched down to the MG dealership.
The stupid thing is that I've heard. So I was talking to a guy from MG about it, and I said, you know, why do we not offer a green?
Yeah.
You know, thinking heritage, everything else. You know, why are we not doing British Racing Green? And then he shows the Cyber GTS in British Racing Green, and he says, I don't know why. He says, apparently, green is a really, really hard color now to paint cars.
Oh, okay.
To get the match between
it is. It is actually.
Metals.
It and is.
It's basically, he says, it used to be that you got really bad mismatch on pearl paints and things like that. The green, for some reason, it used to be reds. So reds used to fade differently and blah, blah, blah. So he says, now, since we moved to water-based paints, he says, greens are really, really hard to match. He says, and so he says the green Slave GTS was a respray job that we did in house. He says, you know, it wasn't done at the factory. He says, but I wouldn't want to worry. He says, don't stand too close to it. But he says, what do you think of it? And I said, well, I think it looks great. I think the Cyber GTS looks fantastic. You know,
so tell us, what is this? This is a coupe or a hardtop?
It's
what
a
is
two it? Plus what two. Yeah, it's basically like the MGB GT. It's two plus two. You can have people in the back as long as they're amputees. You know, the back seat is purely for show purposes.
like the
perhaps
old MGB.
A small lap dog. You know, it's not got any leg room really, but effectively it's the convertible with a bit of back seat where the folding top would go. I thought it looked fantastic. It looked a bit like a Jaguar F type, sort of Aston Martin-y sort of, you know, DB7, DB9 sort of look to it. Guy Pignakis from MG isn't convinced. He thinks I'm just not sure about the proportions. I think, you know, it's, but I think it looks great. But actually, again, I think whereas the Cyberster looks better in real life than photos, I think the Cyber GTS looks better in photos than it perhaps does in real life.
Right.
If that makes sense.
So is there any decision on it yet? Or I heard that maybe they were thinking of putting it into production more.
They are considering it. I mean, it will depend partially on, obviously, volumes that they see with Cyberster. The anticipation Cyberster is that they want to do about 1,500 a year, which is not a lot. If it doesn't, I mean, I can see that the GTS, if it's a fairly similar platform to the Cyberster, so if the GTS is able to be made with, you know, only a couple of variances to bodywork and a little bit of obviously interior trim difference, you know, it's not requiring massive reworkings, then I think that it's going to be
more of a chance.
Probably.
Okay. And we've got some, coming back down to more earthly vehicles that more of us can afford. There's the new HS FEV unveil. What can you tell us about that? Because so, HS is a big seller for MG.
Yeah, so the HS, so some of dealers are currently in there this week at Millbrook again. Started yesterday, going through till Thursday, Friday, all being taught about. I think there's two from each dealership going down to try and drive the new HS and you know, learn all about it. It looks like it should be really good. I mean, from my electrical sort of side of things, the FEV with an increased range of 75 miles over the original 35 is a massive improvement.
So it's like the MG3 Hybrid Plus. They've massively increased the battery.
So the MG HS is a plug-in hybrid. It's got a 75-mile sort of 22 kilowatt-hour battery. Yeah. So realistically, it's the same sort of usable battery capacity as the original Nissan Leaf had.
Right.
So, but then it's a plug-in hybrid, and it's got an upgraded electric motor, so it should drive. Obviously, I haven't driven it yet myself. I won't get my opportunity until the demonstrators come. I believe that the HS petrol is due end of August, start of September, and the FEV is due around sort of October, November time. So
not long.
Yeah, so a little bit longer to wait.
Yeah. Okay, that sounds great.
One other thing I just wanted to mention, just looking at the time and think probably best of. There's been a lot of chat on Facebook and on the forum as well about ADAS lane keep assist on the MG4 and reports published by Which and then subsequently republished by some newspapers and things. Which are basically saying that there's dangerous driving characteristics of the ADAS lane keep assist on MG4. So there's a statement come out from MG today saying MG Motor UK is finalising a software enhancement for customers, which will be approved by the relevant authorities who we've been cooperating with closely. Customers will be contacted shortly by their MG dealer, but to be clear, this upgrade has not been classed as safety related and it is designed to improve the driver experience. So the driving characteristics, which have been raised by Which, have been fully examined and assessed by all of the relevant regulatory bodies within the UK and Europe, and they're satisfied that they don't represent a safety issue. Now, the thing is that the ADAS system that is used in MG is the same one as you find in lots of other cars.
Yeah,
and
but it's how it's integrated, same issue calibrated,
I have the same issue with my Hyundai Ioniq 5. If I go on narrowish country roads, you know, I'm talking B roads and smaller, the narrowness of the road isn't really suited to an ADAS system because you know, you've got a car, you've got, you know, the road path that you're in might be 6 foot across, my car is 6 foot across, and therefore that if the white lines become unreadable, or if the, you know, if there's a a bush build, you know, build coming out into the road, the ADAS system just can't cope with it.
Well, it's been a long-standing issue that people highlight. Some have had more problems than others, but yeah, it makes sense why it's not safety rated, because it's classed as driver assistance rather than course safety.
Yeah,
and that, that's, I mean, good to hear that that will, so everybody will get that.
It's yeah, so they'll be contacting everyone, and I imagine it'll be done as
a service item. Okay, quick roundup of other news on the models. So the MG3 Hybrid Plus selling well. Oh, bless you.
Hay fever, sorry.
That's right.
MG3 Hybrid is selling well.
Yeah.
A lot of people, I mean, as I say, this Chorley Flower show, we had it on display. A number of people looking at it and going, well, that'd be a really good upgrade from my Fiesta. You know, or that'd be really good. You know, it's seeing, you know, oh, I've got a Yaris at the moment. That looks a lot nicer. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot better value. And it starts at 18 and a half grand. You know, so it's ridiculously well priced compared to your, you know, your other hybrids. Like Yaris hybrid starts at around 24. So, yeah, it's a really, really well priced car.
It's good money. Drives well. Good power. MG4. We've got the Estate, which is due to replace the MG5, and a facelift rumored. Although that's less
no further news at this stage.
But that's still end of this year?
I believe so. I believe so, yeah. I will, of course, report back if I get any news on that. But at the moment, I haven't seen anything new.
I'd say for MG5 owners looking to upgrade, they would, you're expecting it to be stretched to be similar. We don't know anything about it, but our expectation would be that it will be a decent.
Our expectation is that there will be an Estate version of the MG4 that will be similar proportions to MG5, possibly slightly bigger boot.
Yeah. But you'll get a very different interior because obviously you've got the new platform, the modern.
Yeah.
You know, some people like the more traditional cosseting.
Well.
Yeah. Rear drive, so it'll be a different suspension driving experience as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. MGZS, as you said, due to be replaced.
Yeah. I saw some spy shots of the petrol version on the Australian website today. That's due to be unveiled, I believe, September, the petrol version.
Yeah,
the electric version might switch into the new year. It's going to be they're going to switch the model. So at the moment, ZS and ZS EV are effectively very, very similar looking, very similar cars, interiors the same, etc. They're going to divert slightly.
Okay,
the ZS EV is going to become on the MG4 platform.
Yes.
So it's going to divert away from the petrol model, and so it's going to have its own.
Is the petrol model staying on the same platform, or is it getting a new one? Do we know?
The petrol model is moving onto a platform which accepts both petrol and hybrid options.
Okay, so like gone down the route with the MG3. Yeah, okay. Cool. No more news on IM, still due to come to the UK. This is the
nothing
luxury
as yet.
Brand.
No, I mean...
The L6, S6.
Nothing at the moment. MG normally has a summer conference around now, but they've been so busy with Goodwood and then this training for the staff that they've not bothered to do an MG conference. I suspect they may do one in the autumn. And may give us some more news at that point.
Yeah. Okay. And the same with the MG9, S9.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. At the moment, no news. I'm expecting a flurry of unveils.
I mean, it's not as if we haven't had new MGs being launched, all right? I mean,
part of the problem is I've got no room to put them in the showroom. You know,
well, exactly.
My showroom's getting quite full as it is. So.
Tom, you may remember Miles Too Young, the launch of the MG Metro. A million years ago, and all of the metros when they launched Pebble Mill at one, it was on the TV. It was like one car
Pebble
launch
Mill.
in 20 years, and
it was a big
some
event,
of us would wish they never launched it, but that was a long time ago. That was a long time ago. Now we're getting so many this a year.
Yeah, they kept selling the old Mini for donkey's years after that, before they replaced it.
They did.
Yeah. Okay,
in fact,
good. That's a good round
in argument.
The good roundup of the news. Now, as Leo mentioned, he's off on his road trip, and originally that was going to be with the Cyberster, but sadly not this road trip. They'll have to wait for a future road trip.
Yeah.
But last podcast, you mentioned a card that you'd bought, which is really handy for charging.
Yeah. So, absolutely. So, the cards. So most of Europe works on a touch card when you go to charge. So I have the Electroverse card, which is the one that you get from Octopus Energy. I also have the Charge Map card as well. So yeah. I've already done some look at different things. The Electroverse, in most of the times of the places I'm looking to possibly charge, that works out slightly cheaper than the charge map. That said, this is like 25p a kilowatt on a fast charge.
Right. Yeah.
25p a kilowatt. That's like what we should be having here, but we don't. So that's what you get in Europe. Then I looked at another thing that was on the forum. Somebody asked about the ODB. Have I got it right? Tell ODB me I got two, it right this time. Yeah. ODB2s. And someone asked which ODB2 Bluetooth. So I bought the one that was actually mentioned on the forum as the one to buy. I bought it off Amazon, arrived, plugged it in. What's really great is it actually connects in, and it connects and it tells me immediately the state of health of my battery on the car scan app. And then when I go onto some of the mapping ones, the one, what's, I can't never remember what it's called, ABRP.
A Better Route Planner. Yeah.
A Better Route Planner. It's all up there. It's telling me how many miles, how the state of my battery, and better planning for when I'm going to stop so I can actually better control my, I can't control my bladder, but I can control when I need to stop for putting in fuel. It all is looking good. So that's it. The other thing I had to get a Critair sticker for my car. So anybody who drives in France, that's, you need important, a Critair sticker. So that's it, really.
Great.
That's my planning. And tomorrow I get on the ferry.
Yeah, we look forward to hearing your trip. About your trip. Have a good one. Also, you got the update for Tesla charging for your MG5.
Yeah. So I was stopping at MG. One of the chargers that I'm looking at is Tesla. I did a test prior. I plugged in my car into an open Tesla charger. It said no. I took it to my dealer. I had an excellent experience with my dealer. They checked the numbers. Originally, it said no. Then they said, look, we'll do the update. But if it doesn't work and you need a new unit, you're going to pay for the new unit.
So this is the EVCC unit?
They did the update.
Yeah.
No problems. I went back to exactly the same charger, to the exact same one, plugged in again at Tesla, charged.
It worked. And so you didn't have to
very
pay.
Happy. Didn't have to pay. But I am, to clarify, I am with a service plan with them. So I am.
Right. So you're paying in another way. I get it. But it's a good experience. Just coming back to the Lane Keep Assist update, Miles, we've had a question on the chat again from Bernie. Will that be free? I mean, you say that people will be contacted. Will they be expected to pay because it's not safety critical?
No. This will be done as a service action. So it'll be done on behalf of
MG. It'll be
done under warranty, better. Yeah.
Okay. Great. Good. All right. Well, great. Some fantastic news. I'm really looking forward to seeing pictures of Leo and his road trip, and then his Cyberster when it arrives, and these new models coming. Thanks again, guys.
So, last question, Miles. Which color out of the choice now that you've seen the ones? Go on then. Which one?
So, I flip flop between wanting to go for inky yellow just because it's allowed. You know, if I'm going to put the doors up and, you know, in a crazy batwing salute anyway, I might as well have them in bright yellow, to thinking that actually the Camden grey with the red roof and the black and red interior look very nice. I don't honestly think there's a bad combination. I say the surprise for me was that the new English white looked so good in reality, because the photos I thought made it look really, really, really poor, but in reality, and actually in the sunshine particularly, it looks really special.
Looking forward to seeing them for real. But I like the red.
I think the other thing I'd like to mention, there's a really good post in the forum from some of the guys in Thailand who have actually received their cars.
Thank you for reminding us.
They had some very good write-ups and some good pictures of hands-on. And of course, they said there's a few niggly things. Of course you're going to get that. It's, you know, literally, I think from where I can work out, they're the first people to get the cars outside of the factory. And you're going to find a few things, but the general experience was very good.
Yeah, fantastic. Great. Oh, it's exciting times. We're a sport for choice these days. Right. Thanks again, guys. So, folks, please vote again in the poll of the forum to decide the topics for next podcast. A link to the polls in the video description. And we are also, don't forget, we're welcoming MG3 Hybrid Plus owners to join us on this podcast and participate in the forums. Please reply on the podcast thread. A link is in the description. And you can find an audio version of this podcast on all your good local podcast providers. Just search for MGEV's Community Podcast. That's it for us tonight. Many thanks to the volunteer moderators who keep the forums running smoothly, Alb, Coulomb, and Rolf. And many thanks from Stuart to the podcasters for giving up their evenings to share their wisdom with the community. My personal thanks tonight to Leo and to Miles for joining us. Thank you, guys. And if you found this podcast useful, please click on the like button. Also, if you subscribe and click the notification bell, you'll get notified next time we go live, which is particularly useful if we change the day at the last minute. We'll be back again very, very soon. Goodbye. Thank you, guys.
Goodbye.
Cheerio. Bye.